A Whale on Wall Street by Roy Trumbull, copyright 2007, Chapter 8, Sharks and Sunshine. The news that a member of the HYPA student body had money had an effect like blood in the water does on sharks. In this case, the sharks came in two varieties. Some were ladies with real or faux blonde hair, or raven black, or lustrous auburn. Regardless of their stated majors, they shared another major, which was finding a rich husband or someone who had the prospects of becoming one. The other type of shark was the one who was going to make you rich by helping himself to your money. Young ladies who'd been barely willing to acknowledge that Harry existed were suddenly all smiles and wearing short skirts and revealing bodices on the coldest of days. Hunters must set their traps. Harry had a long memory for past indifferences. Also, he didn't fancy carrying on a conversation with one of these great beauties. Great beauties border on the tedious, being mostly occupied with their looks and their fashionable clothing. That's followed by years of trying to preserve how they looked in their prime, only to lose the battle. In the meantime, the cosmetic barons accrue substantial profits. While Harry might have enjoyed a fling or two, he was wise enough to know there are fewer free flings than free lunches. His mind would run out the consequences and then say, no. By mail, by telephone, and by visit, the other sharks came. Harry had always had an interest in investments and read the business section in the newspaper when time permitted, and also several investment magazines. He was well equipped to recognize most of the extant schemes. His adoptive father had taught him all the classic con games and about manias and Mr. Ponzi's modest invention. He was able to send the sharks away empty-handed. This made him appreciate Ruth all the more. She was smart and level-headed and said what she meant. She didn't bat her eyes and tell him how wonderful he was. She was more likely to point out some glaring error in his reasoning. He was comfortable with her and with the give and take. One day he received an express mail package from Manny's lawyer in Stamford with some papers to sign. Included was an envelope that just said Harry on it. There was a note from the lawyer apologizing for the delay in giving him the note. It had been dictated by Manny some years ago to be given to his son if his son ever turned up. It read, "Son, I wanted to let you know something about your mother. Her name was Sadie Russell. I was at least 15 years older than her when I got her pregnant. She was a junior staffer for a committee of the House of Representatives. We've had very little contact over the years. I had a friend do some checking, and this is what he came up with. Sadie Russell married Joseph Margolish in 1985. Their last known address was Brooklyn. The note gave a few more details and had Manny's signature at the bottom. This presented Harry with a quandary. One parent had made an attempt to find him, but the other hadn't. How much energy did he want to put into finding her? And then, how could he not want to take this to completion? Harry's next move was to invite Ruth to go meet his parents. While not exactly a proposal of marriage, it was a step in that direction. The implications were not lost on Ruth. She found herself wondering if this were all too soon. They were both green and lacked so much of what they needed to know. Was the future theirs, or were they destined to go its ways with others? She was flattered that Harry seemed ready to make a commitment. Harry had in the meantime checked the Brooklyn telephone directory. Margolish filled three columns. There were 9 listings for Joseph or J. Margolish and 5 listings for Sadie or S. Margolish. Calling each to ask, "Are you my mother?" didn't seem like a plan. He needed to narrow it down. Once in politics, always in politics. That had been true for Manny. Was it true for Sadie? If still in Brooklyn, she was most likely a mover in the Democratic Party. He needed to talk to some party old-timers. He would proceed slowly, but proceed he would. Ruth's visit to see his parents went well. Soon his mother Adele was talking to Ruth like they'd known each other for years, a good sign. She complained to Ruth about various aches and pains that she hadn't mentioned to her son. Ruth advised her to try vitamin D. Drugstores carry 1,000-unit tablets. It has many properties, including acting as an anti-inflammatory. Just think, all these years we were just one letter away on either side. First it was C, and then E, but D seems to deliver the goods. A month later, it was Harry's turn to visit Ruth's parents, Alex and Debbie Parnell. They lived in New Milford, Connecticut. They took the train to Brewster, New York, and Alex met them at the station. Trains do go further north, but not frequently and never on weekends. They went north on Route 122 to Pawling before crossing over to Connecticut. Alex was a master of the probing question, so Harry got the third degree while trapped in the car. Debbie had been to a roadside farm and come home with corn picked that day. They stood out on the porch and shucked ears of corn, which were then deposited in a boiling pot on the stove. Debbie explained the best-tasting corn was harvested only when the water was already boiling. No time allowed for the sugar to convert to starch. She served a beef stew with fresh cut-up vegetables and the corn, and no one went away hungry. There was a fresh peach pie for dessert. The weekend went as well as can be expected. The Parnells' caution was coupled with an undercurrent of enthusiasm that maybe this was the guy. He didn't have two heads. He was studying to be a doctor, and according to Ruth, he had some money. She didn't tell them how much. Mission accomplished, they returned on the train Sunday evening.